These are the Kashi Tapes. U-Man and Favaz explore the backstories and interviews heard on Kashi, the longest-running rock station in the country.
Hello, everybody. I'm John Hewlett, and my partner is...
Favaz.
It's time for episode 35 of the Kashi Tapes. We go back in time and we listen to interviews that either myself or Favaz did here at Kashi 95, and we analyze them and talk about them and play them back. And today,
make fun of each other.
Yes, and there's some of that going on, too. Today, we highlight a gentleman who unfortunately took his own life not all that long ago, but is certainly one of the most... idolized and respected vocalists in rock history, and that is Chris Cornell.
Yeah, it's kind of weird to be doing this knowing how he died. Yeah. You know, we had Ronnie James Dio last week, but he died of cancer. Here, Chris Cornell, you know, took his own life just a couple of years ago. And
in a very violent way, too. He hung himself.
Yeah, he hung himself. And yeah. It was really sad, you know, because he was a great singer. He had a lot of friends in the business. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've seen him at the pageant. Have you ever seen him live by himself?
No,
I saw Soundgarden at a Lollapalooza in Kansas City back in the day, and mm-hmm. they were great. But I saw him at the pageant. I saw him at Pops a couple times. I think for this interview, he was coming in to promote his Pops show. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he was still really, really good. And
young, too, man.
Yeah, he just, you know, he was one of those guys that, well, you'll hear it in the interview, that I just couldn't believe that he would come into a studio to do an interview. You know what that's like. Big stars don't do that anymore because they don't have to.
What time of the day was this?
This was during my afternoon show.
During the week, it was a weeknight event?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I was just blown away.
Well, just the fact that he was at Pops. Now, you know, I'm not running Pops down, but it doesn't have the best of images. But I guess, you know, hey, he wanted to get back down and dirty and grungy with his career and show that he could still, I guess, you know, mix with the people or be on stage close to the people.
You just never know if the pageant was booked. You know, Pops has a similar size, if you will, not as big. Maybe he, just said, yeah, let's do it at Pops or whatever. I don't know. But either way.
Or he had no idea what he was getting into.
it was a really good show.
Well, let's get to the interview because it's kind of long, right?
Yeah, it is longer.
Yeah,
so.
Longer. All right, here we go.
It's Kashi 95 Real Rock Radio, and it's Kashi's No Repeat Week. We're suspending it, though, right now, because we have a special guest in the studio, and that is Chris Cornell. Hi, Chris.
Hi. So what does that mean? Because I wasn't here before, so we're still not repeating anything.
Well, for a whole week, between the hours of 9 a.m. and midnight, we don't repeat a song all week.
Oh, that's cool. You're going to play something of mine more than once?
Well, you figure if I play... Well, I'm definitely going to play something off your new record, but if I play a Temple of the Dog tune that might come up in a couple of days or something. I'm absolving myself.
That's cool. Okay.
Of any stupidity.
You have the power of that.
I can. I'm on the air. So.
Yeah.
Well, Chris is playing at Pops tonight. First of all, I never thought you'd be in the studio with me, man. I didn't think you did stuff like this. Because you don't need to.
Well, yeah, but actually doing live radio is one of my favorite things to do.
Is it really?
Yeah. I love it. I always have. I don't know why.
Huh.
What do you mean you don't know why? Because it's radio.
It's fun.
Part of it is that usually if you do a lot, especially if you do a live radio interview, you tend to like be talking to somebody that actually knows a little bit about music. Because if they didn't, they wouldn't have that job. No one would trust them to be like on the national airwaves. So that usually is part of it.
Right.
I don't know. It's just something I've always kind of liked to do.
But, I mean, I've had enough. Well, actually, I've been at Kashi for 18 years, and I can't really say that I've had just maybe like one guy that was a real, real jerk. That was Zach Wilde, actually.
Was he?
Uh-oh.
Yeah. Okay.
did you go there?
Yes, I did go there, and he, Chris, wanted to know the story behind it.
Okay.
Yeah, and we used to be friends, and he just kind of changed, man, and... that was the only guy.
Was he mean or something?
Because
I only talked to him once ever in my life, and he seemed really nice, but he was very chatty.
Yeah, he was chatty. We were in his tour bus, and then he threatened to kill me after that. So
how come? What'd you do?
What'd you do? He knew. Yeah. Well,
he did something.
It was at a time when Mike Piazza of the Mets was rumored to be gay.
Uh-huh. Okay. Oh no, you went into some territory that
I did, but I had been out with boy, and I've explained this so many times to his fans because they think that I was trying to be a wise ass with him.
Right.
When I really wasn't. I mean, I knew the guy. Uh-huh. I had been out with him the strip clubs. Every mm-hmm. time he came to town, we hung out and drank, mm-hmm. you know. But on that particular Ozfest it was the Ozfest tour. He was a little different, man.
Mm. Hey, and we need to let people know that which, I don't know what number episode it is.
But it's there.
It's there. The actual interview itself with Zach Wilde when he went nuts and threatened to kill Favaz is a part just of this series.
Just search it in the Casey tapes and you'll find it.
Yeah. So let's keep going.
I sensed it right from the beginning.
Really?
And so I said, hey, man, what's that crap about your buddy Mike Piazza being gay? Did you guys ever hook up? And, I expected him to go, hey. Chris was like, it's probably not good.
Yeah, you probably stepped in on that one.
Yeah, whatever. F you. You know, he got mad.
Yeah, that's you never know what kind of response you're going to get from that, especially from a big bearded guy.
I was really scared. Yeah.
You never know. That's one of those things. That's one of those issues that, you know, some guys, it doesn't bother them. Like for me, for example, I have no issue with that, and I don't care about, you know, especially in the rock world, like gay rumors, those are good things. Like if you're in the rock world, any kind of rumor that gets started about you, whether you do any kind of drugs, have any sort of weird lifestyle, are violent, are gay, whatever it might be, it all kind of helps in the end.
It's an attention getter.
Yeah, people kind of want their rock stars to be eccentric and weird, and I mean, look what... For example, Prince has gotten away with in his entire
career. Oh, my God.
He started out by wearing, like, woman's pantyhose and a floor-length purple overcoat, and then he became Prince. So you can pretty much get away with anything.
What's the weirdest thing that you've ever heard about you that was not true?
Ooh.
Hi. You like that question?
What could this be?
Hey.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know if I could say it was weird, but I was in Japan with Audioslave. It was our first tour maybe ever, and started getting phone calls at my hotel in Japan, and nobody really knew where I was, and they were telling me that it was being reported that I was in a hospital. Dead or dying somewhere there.
Ooh.
How weird is that? I remember when Chris took his life a couple of years ago in May. It was right before a Point Fest that he was supposed to play here at the amphitheater. I remember playing back parts of these things, and it was...
Oh, yeah.
Do you ever talk about stuff like that? It's just so weird, man.
It is.
You know?
Because it's funny how it came to his mind then, and then that's how he ended up doing it.
Right.
Makes you wonder if he was thinking.
I don't know. I don't know.
In
really?
That city. And so I was just answering calls and trying to sound healthy so people would go, no, I'm fine. So you're not in the hospital? No, because you'll notice that you called the hotel and I answered
and
the phone.
And you answered the phone.
Yeah, and everything's fine. Other than that, I sort of have always had kind of a normal life in terms of I haven't spent a lot of time running around in front of cameras. And
what about crawling around hotel room halls? You know,
I've had moments like that. I've had a few moments that, you know.
Were you referring to anything specifically when you said that?
No, just getting crazy.
Oh.
Just getting crazy.
Those were usually brief, you know. Nothing that got caught on camera, as far as I know.
Did you abuse your voice much? Because, I mean, you know, I've never really heard that you were a big drinker or smoker or whatever. I would think with that gift.
Can you stop right there? That was a stupid statement on my part because he was a big drinker. Mm-hmm. That was his deal. He went through rehab and the whole bit. So
you just
kind of screwed up there.
You felt like you had to soften your upcoming question regarding that?
No, I don't even know if I realized at the time. This was 2009, 10 years ago. I don't know that I knew he had an issue with it. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
While there were, I was a big drinker and smoker, and it didn't help any. I think I quit smoking. I think that kind of helped, over a couple of years. Just
how long ago was that?
Just in terms of
you talking about cigarettes, I guess.
Cigarettes, okay.
Mm-hmm. Been able to perform, you know.
How long ago did you quit smoking?
It's been about 4 years now.
Has it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a good time to quit. Yeah. I always sort of felt like that's something you don't want to do forever. I don't want to be a 60-year-old smoker. That's probably not such a good thing.
Ooh, another. Another awkward moment here.
No, I don't think so. I mean, for me, I thought of you going, here's another guy that's going to quit, that quit smoking.
Yeah.
Because you're anti-smoking.
Right.
I am too, but, you're a little more vociferous than me.
Well, I say it's awkward because he obviously didn't get to that point.
Oh.
Because he may have had no plans to get there.
I think.
Creepy. I don't know.
I don't think he was thinking along those lines. Mm-hmm. I don't.
And I'm not, I'm definitely like, I'm glad I did quit because I have, like, especially for performing, like I do 2.5-3 hour sets. And I remember when I used to do that, like if Soundgarden did.
For him to sing that long with the way he would sing.
Yes.
It's hard to imagine anybody's voice being able to hold up very long.
His voice changed. I mean, he didn't sing like he used to in Soundgarden, but it was still really good.
Yeah.
He was that good. He just went down.
2.5 hour set and I'd walk off stage, man, I would like collapse.
I bet.
And now, I feel great. If I could play a 3 hour show, walk off, I could go back out and play another hour. I'm like Prince, only I don't have pantyhose.
Oh,
talking to Chris Cornell, you're effortless. So when Prince died, Chris Cornell did a Prince cover of a song, and it was a huge hit for him.
Really?
Isn't
what song
funny?
Was it? I don't know.
It might be the one that Sinead O'Connor did. Nothing Compares to You. I think that's what he did.
It wasn't Red Corvette.
No, I like that song too. This man really on stage because
you just said we stepped on you there, but you said he when he sings he sounds effortless. It makes it look effortless. So that's why I wanted to interject there because that's where you were going before I stepped on you.
All those years that I dug Soundgarden, when I got Euphoria Morning, and I listened to that record over and over, and I thought, man, you could sing anything. You could sing big band. Because it was such a different sounding record. And I remember you played at the American Theater in downtown St. Louis. It was right after the Rams won the Super Bowl.
Right.
And you played, and I'll never, ever, I was standing right there, like off to the side in front there. And I'll just never forget you saying, hey, cheer like your team just won the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
I just thought that was the coolest thing.
I actually remember that.
Do you really?
Yeah.
Well, you actually remember? I believe him.
Yeah. I kind of do.
But that was... Yeah, that was a really fun tour, because that was my first solo tour, and I had actually an amazing time. It wasn't that long of a tour. And then I ended up being an audio slave at that, and just sort of coming out of the blue.
Right.
As a singer, but not just as a singer, as a fan of music, I've always had a pretty wide variety of tastes. Like, the band that kind of made me realized that music was important to me as a fan of music was the Beatles, and I was a little kid.
Yeah, there you go, Johnny. I'd like to hear that.
I was very young. I was 8.
Right. But did he sit on a couch with Paul McCartney?
No, probably. You should have asked him. No. Not just to him, but like Stone Temple Pilots, too. I hear Beatles influence in Stone Temple Pilots music
some of their
all
stuff.
The time.
Mm-hmm. It's everywhere.
And I know a lot of people in rock bands who had that sort of a moment, like... Kiss is a band that created a lot of those moments, or The Clash, or where someone's a teenager and they hear something and they're like, I want to do that, or they'll see it and they'll be like, I want to do that. Bono has that story. I saw that, or Bowie has that story too. First I saw this band, I thought, that's what I'm going to do with my life. I didn't really have that because I was so young when I got into music. I just became sort of a music fan as that's what I did. I didn't play sports. I wasn't really into school. I was into that. And what ended up happening is I think as a singer and as a songwriter, as I became a guy in a band who becomes a singer, I had a lot of influences. And what I was initially known for, which is Soundgarden, we sort of had a focus. We knew sort of what the identity of that band was supposed to be. And I wrote and sort of sang and steered into that identity. But like Temple of the Dog is a great example of, I had a whole bunch of songs that didn't fit that and needed to go somewhere.
Were you ever vocally trained?
Somewhere around the Super Unknown period when we were on tour, I started having voice problems. And I was playing guitar and singing, and it was a lot of songs that were really difficult on either guitar or vocals. So I was starting to have problems We were really loud on stage, and I was using those microphones that were like more and more resistant, where you had to like have your face literally right in front of it to
kinda
hear
like the,
anything.
Kind of like the ones we use, John.
I wouldn't do that.
Yeah, yeah.
You got to be right on top of it.
That's right. And we're speaking with, this is Favaz interviewing Chris Cornell.
Yeah. And he's talking about, playing. Wow, can you? That's your email. Can you close your email out?
Can I?
Yeah, remember we did this before.
Oh, yeah. So just go ahead and close
it. Yeah, just close it out. So he's talking about Soundgarden. And the only time that I saw them, like I said, was at Lollapalooza in Kansas City. And I kind of remember, I mean, he was a screamer back in the day anyway. Yeah. He had that big, ballsy voice and everything. And that was the way that it was that night too. So I'm not surprised to hear that he kind of lost it a little bit and he had to take some training and, it was just kind of crazy.
But his training came well into his career that was already taken off. So he didn't have any initial training to answer your question, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I had this Stevie Wonder thing going on where my face would be like half a foot from the mic most of the time, and I'm kind of moving around, and I started to lose my voice. So I solved the problem with just using an old school microphone, like just an old Shure 57, and that solved the problem. But I did start taking some training then, and it has helped a lot in terms of me being able to tour as much as I do, because I like to tour a lot and I like to play long shows. And that has really helped a lot.
I'm surprised.
When it comes to your voice, you do have to learn, because we're in the business. Mm-hmm. I don't know about you, but I had an issue for a while there where I'd have an acid reflux, and it was affecting my vocal cords, and I had kind of a little a sore or something on my vocal cords. You learn how to eat correctly. You learn, to prop yourself up at night when you're sleeping. Mm-hmm. You learn how important sleep is. You learn the different things can actually make your voice feel better. And these guys have to learn it along the way, too, or they're not going to make it. And it sounds like that's
so
exactly.
More so for them, because they're singers.
Yeah.
We talk.
Right, right.
I know all those things, too, and I don't do any of them. The length of your shows, man, because I saw you almost 2.5 years ago at the pageant when you played, and you played for almost 3 hours, it seemed like. And I was blown away, dude. I mean, I only thought Springsteen did shows like that,
Well, there's a lot of material, and there's a lot, like, even now that I've got the new album Scream out, which doesn't really sound like anything else. There's so much territory to cover musically.
You do, man.
And I just kind of feel like, I want to get a little bit of everything in there, And there's a lot of different feels musically going on, and I just kind of want to get it all in there.
What did you end up thinking of his solo music there? Because I loved Soundgarden, and then those first two Audioslave albums I thought were really, really good.
And Temple of the Dog is a great record.
Yes. But then after those two Audioslaves, I kind of moved on.
I mentioned the one, Euphoria Morning. That was his first solo record, and I absolutely loved it, and it was a different style and everything, and went to see him. But then after that, everything else that he put out was just okay.
Yeah.
And I can't say that I went out and sought his solo albums after that, It was just, okay stuff.
So about this time of his life, things were starting to level out for him professionally.
I think so. Professionally. Yeah. And then they, when he took his own life, they were going back up because Soundgarden was back together.
Oh, mm-hmm.
And also I'll go off into these acoustic moments where I never have a set list for that. I just start playing songs. And if people are shutting out songs, I'll kind of keep going. And then sometimes that can go on for a really long time and I don't realize it. Like if it's a venue, like tonight there's no curfew, so I can play as long as I want. But if it's a venue that has one, I can
pops.
Get into trouble way. We're all of a sudden
no curfew.
That should have been
go to the strip clubs next door.
That should have been a clue to him right there. I might have booked myself into a place that I probably should have gone somewhere else.
And saying this has to be your last song, and I'm kind of like, what? But I'm not in last song mode yet. There's a whole bunch I still have to do, and that's a build to the last song. There's an art to this. And then there has to be, like, encores, that kind of thing.
Sure. I'm glad you're at Pops tonight. Have you been over there yet?
No, I haven't.
I've had a lot of tang over there, so I'm telling you, this is the place to go.
Well, maybe I tell them about it. Here we go. Maybe I tell them. Listen.
I've heard it's like a 24-hour bar that is between two strip clubs.
It's a beautiful thing, Chris. It really is, man. You can walk out at 2 in the morning and go to the right. or go to the left.
Uh-huh.
And you're at a strip club.
Yep.
It's, and I know you're married, and your wife is your tour manager, right?
Well, she's my wife is like all kinds of
she wears many hats.
My money manager, my tour manager. She pretty much keeps me in line.
So you won't be going to strip clubs?
No, I won't be going to the strip clubs. Right. But you know, I was never much of I've only been to a strip club twice in my life. Once was by accident because I was driving home from the Seattle airport, and there are these weird laws around the airport where. In Washington, you can't have alcohol and a strip club in the same venue, but by the airport, you can. And I was coming back from the airport, and the flight landed at like 8, and I just wanted a beer, so I pulled over with my buddy. We went into this bar, and it was a strip club. We didn't know.
Hey, bonus.
And the other time I was at a strip club was with...
He didn't catch that.
I'm an asshole.
The band The Screaming Trees.
Yep,
I remember
that.
And a friend of mine... And we co-produced their album, and another friend of mine signed them to Epic, I think it was. And so they wanted to celebrate that they had been signed, and they were going to go make this record. And so they wanted to go to a strip club. So I went to a strip club with the Screaming Trees and had that experience.
Memories.
Yeah. It was a weird thing. I think they're kind of weird. I don't know.
Yeah. I haven't been in a few years, but when I go... I hadn't. But I used to go a lot. Hold on. Have I ever told you the first song I ever heard at a strip club? The first time I walked in, it was the PT's Sports Cabaret, right? You know, right in Sojay. My first time ever. And the first song I heard was Call Me the Breeze from Lynyrd Skynyrd. And to this day, I can't hear that song without thinking of that and walking in going, wow, this is cool. Mm. They're playing good music.
Last time I was in a strip club was the bachelor party for my first wedding back in 1983.
That was the last time?
That was the last time.
Oh, my gosh.
And I was wearing those glasses, the tortoise shell frame glasses. And the lady on the stage, they pushed me up there, you know, to participate in something because I was the guy's bachelor. And she took my glasses off.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought to myself, well, what is she going to do with those? And... yeah, she put those where you thought she might put them.
You can say wherever you want, John. This is a podcast. So she put them in her junk?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, the one lens.
Oh,
the... and then she took it out, and she put them back on my face.
And I bet it was kind of blurry.
Yeah, things were like, I was like, taking the Dial soap test. I couldn't see out of one eye. Anyway,
wait a minute, hold on. Hold on. So who was at your strip club that we would know? That was in radio.
Who was with me that
time? Yeah, who was with you that time? Mason there?
Joe Mason could have been because he was working there.
Because he seems like the kind of guy that would be there.
He could have been there.
Hi, Joe. Love you, but you're a stripaholic. I know you are.
I don't remember. I don't remember.
Okay.
But, anyway.
All right. Away from the tables and just kind of watch, you know, take it all in. Another
thing happened to those glasses that I might want to share with people. I went to a live broadcast one morning, Smash and I, to a pig farm.
Yeah.
And we went inside the incubation room and everything. Mm-hmm. Just stunk to high heaven.
Right.
So the broadcast is over with. I go home, okay? And I got to get cleaned up, and I take my glasses off and put them on the nightstand, and I go in the bathroom, and I take a shower and everything. And I come back out, and I go, oh, man, good thing I got that all off. I go to reach for my glasses. I went to put them on. I went, oh, my God, the funk had gotten into those glasses. Mm-hmm. I had to throw those tortoise shell glasses in the garbage.
You did?
Yeah.
They were prescription?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a lot. That says a lot.
With all that history, those glasses, it broke my heart to have to throw them away.
See the long conversation that strip clubs have started between you and I, Chris, and we're still talking about it here with Chris, too. He's being there with the dollar in front of me and all that.
The concept of going to a bar to pick up a girl makes perfect sense. Obviously, I did that from the time that I was old enough to get a fake ID. but to go to a strip club never really did make a lot of sense. Like, that just seems like a way for trouble to get started.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. Hey, so the new record is called Scream. Chris is playing tonight at Pops. He's got a great, great band. And I want to play a Temple of the Dog song first.
Great.
And then we'll play Long Gone. But I want to play, because I really, Temple of the Dog for me,
one of the best records of the 90s, man. And
thank you.
It came out at the perfect time, and I want to play Pushing Forward Back.
Excellent.
Here it is. It's KC95. It's KC95, Real Rock Radio, Temple of the Dog, Pushing Forward Back. The guy that wrote that song, sang that song, is right across from me. That's Chris Cornell. Hi.
Hi.
So you know you're a big rock star when, you know, people come in. I have a lot of bands, but everybody's been like, man, can I get a picture with them? Can mm-hmm. I do this? Can I do that? Mm-hmm. You have a bodyguard with you. Because people, they start trouble with you?
No, he's here to make sure I don't get in it. Look at him. He's got a smile on his
he
face.
He does have a smile on his
face. He's here to make sure I don't cause any trouble. That's the fact. No, nobody ever has any problem with me.
Chris Cornell tonight.
You just got to be careful about me. That's the problem.
At Pops. Yeah, right. So Temple of the Dog, man. I mean, I think basically people know the story. You had some songs written about Andrew Wood from Mother Love Bone.
Yes, Reach Down and Say Hello to Heaven, I kind of wrote and recorded demos at home. And I had some other songs going on that were in that kind of vein. And I recorded those two and had this idea that maybe we could do like a single. Because, you know, you still had vinyl singles back then.
Right.
Maybe a 10-inch, and I could get the remaining members of Mother Love Bone to play on it. And then I got shy and decided, no, you know, that's stupid. And so somehow Jeff Ament and Stone Gossard got a hold of it.
From Pearl Jam.
They, in fact, said, no, that's a great idea. And at the time, I'd written a few more songs. I can't remember which ones they were. Your Savior and Wooden Jesus and Hunger Strike. And we decided we were going to put together this album. And we were going to do some of Andy's solo songs because Andy Wood had a lot of like really sort of ethereal, super cool solo music. And we were going to put that all together and make an album. And right away, some of Andy's friends and family members started responding really negatively to that, like as if we were going to, as if we were kind of trying to, in a way, exploit his work. And what we were really trying to do was we were all suffering because we wanted people to know who he was and hear his music.
Right.
So
they had good intentions on it, yeah.
Right. And for those that don't know, Andrew Wood was the singer of Mother Love Bone. He took his own life. He had drug issues, and he knew he was friends with Chris and all the guys in Pearl Jam. Really, I think he was in a band. I think Mother Love Bone had a couple of the guys from Pearl Jam in it. You know, they all knew each other, and that's why the record came out, and that's why he's talking about him now.
Yeah,
I think it was Jeff Ament, now bass player of Pearl Jam, who he just kind of took the leadership role and said, "Screw that, we'll just make our own album," and we just decided we would make an album. So I wrote a couple more songs, and then co-wrote three songs with Stone Gossard. Pushing Forward Back is one of them.
Yeah.
And we had 10 songs, and we went in, and we recorded all 10, and that was it.
In about how long did that take? Because that just seems like one
it
of those...
It took 14 days all together.
God, man,
and,
that's great.
And that includes mixed and everything. So, you know, I think it was like 2 days of tracking the songs, and then 2 days of vocals, and then some mixing. And we only had two rehearsals
at that time. Soundgarden and Pearl Jam hadn't hit it big yet, had they?
Well, Pearl Jam was just forming at that time, which is one of the reasons why the album was actually allowed to exist, because Matt and I were in Soundgarden, of course, and Mike McCready and Stone and Jeff were not technically signed to a record deal.
Mm-hmm.
So we made the album, and it was allowed to be released on A&M, which was Soundgarden's label. So there was no issue with, you know, guest appearances or what label is going to get the album. Like, for example, when Audioslave became a band, the first album was on Sony, and then the second album was on Interscope, and then the third album was on Sony again. And they did this back, which I don't really think was such
that's
a great
weird.
Thing.
That's weird to go from one label to the other for each release.
It's weird. And you know, right? You know, they had just done their first tour. They never toured behind this record. First of all, it's one of the greatest collaborations ever. Those guys, mm-hmm. you know, who would end up being in Pearl Jam and Soundgarden, whatever. They did their first tour, and it was a success. And they were like, "Hey, we're going to do some more." And then he killed himself.
Yeah.
You know.
No.
Us.
I think different promotion levels from each.
Well, you get
too,
like a group of people that are sort of invested in what it is that you do, and you meet them all, and that's your crew, and you're going out, and you're presenting this album together, and then the second album comes out, and it's all different people, and I don't think that was the best thing for us. So fortunately, with Temple of the Dog, it didn't happen, and Pearl Jam was just forming. Eddie had just kind of shown up in Seattle and was starting to work on songwriting with them, and he was at the second Temple rehearsal, which is how he ended up on Hunger Struck, because I'd sort of written it as a 10th song, and it only had one verse, and then the chorus kicked in, and I just sort of thought of it as a vibe track, and he saw me singing I was singing the low parts on the high parts, figuring I would just, you know, it's easy to do in the studio,
right.
But live it was kind of a pain. And he saw me doing that, and he just kind of came up and started singing the low parts, and a light bulb went off in my head. I thought, if there's two guys, I can sing a verse, and then the band kicks in, and even though he's singing the same words, he's a different guy. So that makes it two verses, technically, in my book. And if you got two verses and some choruses, that's like a whole song. And then somehow, you know, when that, what I sort of interpreted as a kind of deep album track became the one that people gravitated toward as a single, and it was the only real single on the album. We made a video for, you know, real cheap, and that was it. You know,
fond memories,
yeah,
of that whole thing.
Well, that was really great for this reason. We
stop it for a second, John.
Yeah.
So that was the first time Eddie Vedder ever heard his voice recorded in song on a record. Was that song,
Hunger Strike.
Yeah,
wow.
So Pearl Jam was so fresh, they hadn't even laid down anything yet, and that was it right there.
I wonder if he was just saying, I'll just give this a try, see how it works.
I don't know.
Like helping himself.
You know, they ended up being really good friends, too.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
This happens to people, but not everybody. We lost someone who was really like a great friend of ours, and who also was someone who really inspired us all as musicians, and he died very young and very tragically, and that album really sort of gave us some way of
closure, sort of, in a way.
Closure and catharsis, you know. It got us, we were all together doing something. All the people that were the closest to him were kind of together in a room telling stories about him. Wow, we're actually creating something that will keep his memory alive, and that has now grown. And, you know, a song like Say Hello to Heaven, I don't know how many times, I've had guys from Hell's Angels come up to me and say that they played that song at their father's funeral and
sure. And
start crying.
Sure.
Yeah,
we
hear that all the time at the radio station.
Yeah, we get requests like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, those songs in tribute to Andy have taken on their own life, and also given an opportunity for us, like right now in 2009, to be talking about him.
Right,
and it was good for all of us individually. Mm-hmm. You know, we went on after that album, Soundgarden recorded Bad Motor Finger and Pearl Jam recorded 10 and we
rest
went
is history.
Off and did.
Yeah, you got that right.
I tell you, man, the first time I ever heard Soundgarden was from Bad Motor Finger, and it was Outshined, the song. Mm-hmm. And I was working the KC Morning Show, so you had to be there too. And I was in that other studio in the Annex building, ready to go in. I think Sue Daniel was still on the air, and she played that song. And I walked in, I was like, who the fuck is that? Mm-hmm. I mean, it was just so good and hard. Yeah. And that was the first time I ever heard Soundgarden.
Yeah, that was an exciting period of time for rock music, which was
sure
starting
was,
to find
man.
It was lose its way. It was starting to lose its way, and that whole Seattle grunge sound thing saved us for quite a period of time there and refreshed the whole brand of rock music there.
Exactly.
And these guys and this guy right here was at the foreground.
Big part of it.
Yeah.
A lot of stuff, and we had that one little moment where we were making an album for no reason other than to make the album. You know, there was no pressure on us for any reason. There were no expectations of it.
You ever talk to those guys?
Yeah, occasionally.
Do you?
Yeah.
Chris is playing at Pops tonight, and I want to get to the new record, Scream. We're going to play a song called Long Gone that has been mixed by Howard Benson, who has done anybody that's anybody in the business as far as mixing and things like that. But this, are you tired of defending your record? Because you did it with Timbaland, who's very popular in the pop, hip-hop circuit. You know, I've read enough articles about it. I'm not going to ask you about it. People know what it is. Are you tired of talking?
Well, you know, in the world of straight-up rock and roll, there are people who
He had this rapper guy.
T Timbaland.
Yeah. Yeah. Produced the album, and it was some negativity.
Yeah, he took a lot of crap for it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hmm.
Who get it and people who don't get it. And that's sort of simple. You know, there's no defending it. It's not like I'm trying to get someone who only likes guitar rock to change their taste. That's
right.
That's not my mission here. You know, in terms of making the album, for me, it was very similar to doing something like Temple of the Dog or Audioslave. It was like, I don't know what the result is going to be. It's different than what I'm used to doing. And now seems like a great time to go and experiment with something different and have fun and make an album that doesn't sound like anything else I've ever done.
You've earned the right.
And that's what I did here.
Do you think he accomplished that?
I think he did, yeah. I mean, at that point, you're like, I want to do something different. He was only the singer of Soundgarden and Audioslave, and, you know, he could pretty much do whatever he wanted to at that time.
You know, it's a lot of people really love it, and so it's, you know, obviously it's sort of turned some people off that are hardcore rock fans. And I'm, you know, I don't judge them for that either. I totally get it. It's
right.
Like, you know, there are a lot of records that I hate that were made by people who I'm a huge fan of. You know, it just depends on what you like or don't like. But one thing I do think about this album is that I'm obviously a rock fan. I'm a fan of a lot of different kinds of music. But if you just sit back and listen to this album from beginning to end, and as opposed to just like listening to a song here or there, and kind of forget about the sort of genre rules and the genre mixing part of it, and just listen to it for what it is, most of the people that I know that have done that have ended up like loving this album, and it's become one of their favorite albums.
Hmm. All right. Chris is going to play it all tonight. Soundgarden, Audioslave, Temple of the Dog. I saw a set list. A listener sent me one. Did you throw in some Zeppelin the other night?
Yeah, I do that occasionally.
Yeah.
So
I've heard him do Thank You before.
Yeah.
He can do it all.
Getting back to that Scream album, wasn't there some controversy because Justin Timberlake also may have sung on that or something?
I don't know. Maybe you're getting that confused with Timbaland. I don't know. Maybe. But he was the one that produced it, Timbaland. Mm-hmm. And you know, Pops, being the great place that it is, you know, our hockey team is facing elimination tonight in the first round of the playoffs against Vancouver.
How about that?
It's old times. Yeah, not anymore, buddy.
We're ready to win the cup.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
Really?
And they're playing at home tonight at Scott Trade. So Pops is a real bar, Chris. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're playing at a bar tonight that has flat screens TV, flat screens. And so it's going to be great to watch you and then look over my shoulder.
Oh, because the game's going to be going at the same time?
Game will be going
at
the same
time. Will I be able
to
see it?
Yeah, you might be
sometimes
able to.
Sometimes with the stage sight lines, yeah, you can see that kind of thing.
You might be able to, yeah. So
cool.
It's going to be a great night tonight. Thanks for coming in, man.
My pleasure.
Continued success.
Thank you.
Hope you come
much.
Back next time, too. All right, we're going to play Long Gone. This is Chris Cornell's new one. It's KC95.
All right.
Is that the end?
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. Well, there you go. Nice interview, man. To be able to have him come in there and spend as much time as he did, too, uninterrupted by any. Well, you played a couple songs, but
yeah.
But wow, for him to really want to give of himself that much,
he really did.
It was, yeah. He could have, like you say, he didn't have to be there at all. Period. And then he shows up, and he just, you know, just throws it all out there.
Took a picture with him too, and that's one of my most prized possessions. And probably pull it up here, post it again. I don't know. It was, you know, back when I moved out. When I moved out, I was 26 years old, and the records that I listened to all the time was Super Unknown and 10 from Pearl Jam. And so, years later, to have him, you know, more 15 years later, come on my show and be the kind of guy that he was just really, really neat.
Yeah. To be around people that you never thought in your life you'd ever meet.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, I never thought Chris Cornell would be in the studio. It's like, you know, thinking like Eddie Vedder would never be in the studio. Could he do it one day? You never know. Probably not. But if I would have thought the same thing about Chris Cornell.
If I had that kind of celebrity and success in my life, I would do that kind of stuff all the time. Why not give people who are out there as many thrills as you possibly can? You know, like John Hamm going to the hockey game last night and hanging out with people out there and taking pictures of a bunch of people. Why not enjoy your celebrity, you know? You earned it. You worked hard for that kind of respect from other people. Mm-hmm. Enjoy it. And he apparently was, at least at that point, he seemed to be, but we all know what the ending was, and that doesn't make sense,
does
really
it? Yeah, really sad.
It makes no sense.
Still, I think about it now, and it's the one artist that has, you know, passed away in the music field. Even, you know, Tom Petty, I mean, you can think about it. But that one really hit me hard, you know. So. Yeah.
All right, that's it. Episode 35, Chris Cornell, Casey Tapes. I'm John Euled. You can follow me on Twitter at STLUMan and on Instagram, I'm Johnny Euled.
And Instagram, Twitter, Casey Guy, Facebook, KC95 Favaz.
Adios, my friend. That's pretty good.
That was beautiful.
The KC Tapes with you, man, and Favaz. For more on the history of KC, go to KC95.com or the KC mobile app.